Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome everybody to Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, performance enhancement expert, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 44 countries, such as the U.S., Belgium, Canada, Brazil, France, Panama, Japan. Amazing countries tuning in every single week. So thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight those transformational moments that has changed our lives and how we use these to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. Now, you can listen to us every Wednesday on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. However, on different days or different times, we'll do a special pop-up episode for book launches, product launches, speakers that are speaking at an event. So if you have anything like that, if you're listening to the show, love to get you on the show. Would love to do a launch with you and set you up for success and get everybody into what you're doing. You can also join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. You could join us there, talk to the guests. And on the show, speaking of guests, are impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today does exactly that. My guest today is Dr. Joni B. Connell. What is going on today?
Hey, Sean, it's so great to be here. I love your show. I love the idea of being resilient. So I'm very proud to be a guest on the show.
I am super, like, I've been looking forward to this. You know, I have a lot of great guests, but like you and I, okay, are in so alignment, like reading your bio and knowing a little bit about you, like we are in alignment and I cannot wait for this conversation that we're going to have today. You know, like I'm totally into leadership. Totally into like the work-life balance type thing. And I can't wait till we get into that because that's going to be awesome. You know, like building teams and transitions and like everything that you do, like, oh my gosh, like this is going to be amazing. I'm pumped.
Me too. This is great. I can't wait. Let's go.
Let's do this. So if you have any questions for any of my guests on the show, this is a live show. If you're listening to us live, you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. My team is standing by to field any questions and hopefully get you on the show. So the title of this show is this episode is Maximizing Leadership Potential with Dr. Joni Connell. And so let's learn a little bit about her and what she does. She is an organizational consultant and leadership coach specializing in maximizing leadership potential. She works with companies to attract, develop, and retain top talent. She works with individuals to improve their success and happiness in their careers. She is also an author of the book, Flying Without a Helicopter, How to Prepare Young People for Work and Life. As a consultant, Joni develops leaders across generations. She coaches executives and youth at Flexible Work Solutions. She consults with organizations in a variety of areas to include executive leadership development, diversity, generations, flexible work arrangements, work-life balance, life transitions, character and ethics, and team building in virtual teams. Her clients range from Fortune 100 companies, not-for-profit, government agencies, high-tech, biotech, healthcare, finance. Look, she does it all, folks. She will speak to your company. She will speak to your team, and she will revolutionize what you're doing. As a professor, she teaches and has taught business and psychology students of all ages at the Rady School of Management at the University of California, San Diego, the California School of Professional Psychology at Allied International University, and in the Master's in Human Behavior program at the National University. You can connect with her at www.flexibleworksolutions.com. All her links and Facebook and social medias, everything's in the show notes. Connect with her. She sounds like a badass. Just saying. So
my husband would tell you that.
Good Lord. I'm like, why am I, like, you should be hosting this show. Like, what am I doing? Set my game up.
Oh, that's funny. I guess the challenge that people always put me toward is, wait, where's your focus? So
right?
That, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first question I always ask in the show is why. And you know, it's one of the things that I firmly believe in. It's my number one rule of engagement. You know, like if I'm going to have success rules, like number one rule of engagement to get to success is find your why. So what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, what I do is empowering people. And when it comes down to it, you know, all those words you just said really come down to empowering people. And that's why I do it, because that's my passion. And I like to empower people, well, in part because I can. You know, it's when you have whatever it is your gift is, you know, and mine is really being able to help people understand what their gifts are and how they can use their strengths and what they can develop to get to be where they want to be. And I do that a lot with leaders. And then I've also been, in more recent years, doing it with younger people as well. And they are great to work with when you're talking to younger people, because they just have so much out there to give, so much more of their lives to give, so much more potential.
Yeah.
So, you know, working with people to help them empowered to do what they want to do, so they will be successful in their lives and be happy about that. So that's why I do it.
That's a great why. Man, that's solid. So I'm curious, Is there a moment, because we always talk about, you know, the transformational moments, you know, and that's what we really hit on. So is there a moment in your life that put you on the path to where you are now? You know, sexual assault people become, or victims become sexual assault advocates for other victims. Companies get started because of their why. Like, I really want to do this. And then all of a sudden something happens. And a foundation is created, like Make-A-Wish Foundation. And, you know, amazing things happen, you know, based out of certain circumstances. So is there a certain transformational moment that you see that really put you on the trajectory, put you on the direction that you're on right now?
Yes. You know, there really is. It's not as dramatic as some of the experiences you're talking about. But I could tell you, and maybe – you know, the results aren't as dramatic either, but my goal is to empower others to do these great things you're talking about, right? These amazing things. But so my transformational moment was when I was in my late 20s. I was 28 years old. I was an electrical engineer in Silicon Valley. And I'll take you back for just a second, if it's okay, Sean.
Yeah.
And just
absolutely.
Tell you, like, why I got into engineering. That was my first career. So it was pounded into my head from a very young age that I needed to be able to take care of myself and be financially independent from my parents, right? They said 4 years of college, that's it, you're done. You need to be able to get out there on your own afterwards. And so, you know, I kept looking through the college majors, and you know, I was pretty good at science and math and all that and computers. But the one thing that kept sticking out is a professional degree that I could do in 4 years of college was electrical engineering. So that's what I stuck with, and it was hard, and I got a great job in Silicon Valley right out of college. I was in, you know, this dream place. It was totally the dream place, not just for the engineering and all, but I mean, moving out from Boston, Massachusetts, to snowy, slushy weather, as some folks are experiencing.
Right.
To sunny California and having this most just amazing experience and living a life having this beautiful company office, you know, pools, everything, you know, all that kind of thing in Silicon Valley. But, you know, I was there and I was working for several years and I was making good money, as people do there as engineers, but I was really just bored. I was bored. I was unhappy. I didn't feel like I was really doing anything with my life. I mean, I didn't feel like the products that I was making, you know, the work that I was doing back then was more on mainframe computers, helping run the stock exchange, things like that. It wasn't as glitzy as some of the products are today, but still not feeling like I was really being impactful. And I decided, it was 28 years old, and I said, you know, I'm going to be hitting 30 soon. Do I want to hit my 30th birthday and continue on this life of, you know, just sort of mediocrity? And it was at that moment I said, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I really want to make a change. And the change was hard, Sean. I will not deny that, because I mean, giving up a career of electrical engineering and this wonderful lifestyle I was telling you about, it wasn't easy. And, you know, I had to go through a lot to get there. And I'd be happy to share if you're interested.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
So,
that's what we talk about on this show. We talk about the hard stuff.
Yeah, I was hoping the listeners would want to hear this story, because it's a little vulnerable for me. And if I'm willing to go there at this moment, then I hope people will appreciate that. So, you know, being an electrical engineer in Silicon Valley, you know, I got my degree from Harvard, very prestigious life, and with a lot of expectations. At least I thought there was a lot of expectations on me to continue this life and be somebody great and all that. And when I decided I wanted to change and give up this career, the worst part was having to tell my family and friends. And I was just, one of the reasons why I didn't want to do it is because I was going to have to tell my family and friends. I just kept on this trajectory because I felt like I needed to be doing this, because that's what everyone expected me to do. And when I started reaching out, I was really surprised that people were so much more supportive than I thought they would be. And when I just said, you know, I want to switch, and I had gone through a big self introspective piece there. I bought a book, What Color Is Your Parachute? I love that book. I recommend it to people even today. I've been through like a million versions of it, but it's still out there. And I went through and figured out what it is I want to do. And I got help from people around me. My family and friends actually helped me figure out what the next career was. And that was to go back to school and study psychology. So I could do, at the time, what people were saying, you know, you'd be a really good counselor, Joni. You should do counseling. And I realized that what I really want to do was help the engineers, because I had been in that boat. And this is where it gets back to what you were saying. The victims of such and such become advocates for such and such. Well, for me, it was engineers are taught how to be engineers, how to be technical people. They're not taught how to be leaders and communicators and team players, right? And so I went back to school in psychology to be what I could call then was a communications consultant. Now I would call it more of a leadership development consultant, that kind of thing. But it's about helping the engineers develop those kind of communication skills, the soft skills, and the skills that you need to manage people. And I don't work with just engineers. I work with people of all sorts, but a lot of technical people need those skills. And so I can understand where they're coming from. That's why people hire me, because I get it. You know, and it took me a while to develop some of these skills too, but helping people connect and communicate and work better together is so much of what I'm about. So that's
my
story. Yeah.
There you go. Man, I was just thinking, you know, like descriptively, like in my mind, like walking in, sitting down, hey, look, folks, we got to talk, you know, whatever. And you're like, look, you know, I'm just going to go do something else, you know, whatever. And I know most of it was like, you know how much money we spent on that education?
Yeah.
You
exactly.
know how many years. You know, like, I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. We're gonna complain about the tuition. Like, here we go. You're gonna throw away the prestigious. Oh my gosh. You know, but it wasn't like that. Like, it was almost refreshing, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've I made good on it. I had to pay for part of the tuition too. I contributed. I worked all the way through college. This was not like that, that story, but I went to school at Berkeley for my psychology degree. So I kind of went brand name there. Boy, talk about a different experience. It was great to be at Berkeley compared to Harvard. I mean, very different places, and it's fun. I love
awesome.
Berkeley.
So talk about the difference between who you were back then, going to Berkeley, going to Harvard, and who you are now. What stands out for you?
Oh, boy. Okay, let's see. Who I was then and who I am now. Well, you know, there was a lot of freedom in making the change, because who I was then is somewhat of a life stage point of view, too. Like when you're in your 20s, I think you feel like you have to fit in more. You feel like you have to do what you're supposed to do because you're low on the totem pole, right? You want to be able to move up and make more. And so you feel like you have to do a lot more of what people tell you to do than you might when you get a little older. And so back then, I felt like, I mean, I would dress the part. I had short hair. I mean, it wasn't that short. I wore very professional clothes. I felt like I couldn't really be myself. I'd go to work and be serious and do my work and not really let all of me show up. And so when I went into psychology, you know, it's a very different kind of work, first of all. But it was just this liberating experience to say, I don't have to pretend anymore. I can be who I am. And, you know, I can say things. And, you know, I guess maybe it was with engineers too. I'm not talking about feelings. I'm not talking about those kind of things. I'm just talking about the work. And so and then when I'm with a bunch of psychologists, it's kind of funny because it's the other end of the spectrum. And I'm kind of a moderate person in the middle in a lot of ways. I'm not the total touchy-feely person. You know, it's all hug and do a kumbaya here. So it's funny when I show up with psychologists, I have a little bit more of the engineer in me that comes out. But having been through a transformation like that and gone back and done a different career, it just enabled me to say, okay, you know, to everyone, I had pretty much told everyone, my family and friends, people I really cared about, that I wanted to do something that was more of me, and people accepted me, and I realized, well, I can be me, you know, instead of feeling I had to be something else. And so that's what I am now, for better or for worse. Some people might say worse, like my husband sometimes, like, oh, gosh. But, you know, being more of me and letting that out. So that's a better place to be.
Perfect. I like it. We always have that one, because my wife says the same thing. She's like, oh, my God. I mean, we both know. I mean, I went from alcoholism to personal and professional development. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I went to, like, introverted type, you know, overcompensating to I'm just a guy, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just, you know, I want to impact people as a speaker. So I'm always good. You know, my mom's like, oh my God, like, I think he's getting older and senile and like, oh God, you know, but that's what spouses are for, right?
I know. I was just having this conversation yesterday because I do a lot of work with emotional intelligence as a part of leadership development.
Yeah.
And there were three of us who are experts in the field. We're all just sitting around having lunch and we're talking about, well, you know, people always ask us about this emotional intelligence and at work versus at home. And we're like, oh, at home, it's a totally different story.
Oh, yeah. Way dynamic. Do you know who Jen Gruber is?
No, I don't.
All right. So Jen Gruber is a emotional intelligence speaker. She's got a TEDx talk. And if you ever want to hook up with somebody who is literally out there on the front lines, you know, and I met a lot of different, you know, emotional intelligence, you know, professionals, but she is an entrepreneur, goal setter, you know, and her whole focus is entrepreneurship and the emotional intelligence that it takes to do it. Jen Gruber, Jen Gruber is completely awesome. And so, I invite anybody, just go check her out. But it just reminded me. I was like, oh yeah, that too. So let's talk about that. Like, so for those who don't know what emotional intelligence is, so I want you to kind of like give like the book definition, right? Like, what's the, like, literally what is it? But to me, emotional intelligence is you not only being aware of what you're thinking and feeling, but inside of a conversation, what is somebody else thinking and feeling? Are they receiving the information? You know what I mean? And more so being mindful of the emotions in the room and how people are acting in a setting. That, to me, that's what emotional intelligence is. So if I'm wrong, please tell me. But what
oh,
is
you're totally
emotional
wrong.
Intelligence?
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. Yeah. That was completely on the nose there, Sean.
Why are you hosting
yeah,
the
show?
Yeah,
the only thing I would – I know. sorry. I love to add a little
love
humor
it.
Every once in a while.
Love it.
So the only thing I would add is the control part as well. It's being aware and being sensitive to yours and others' emotions, but also being able to manage, maybe would be a better word, manage your emotions and manage the emotions of others.
Yep.
So, you know, being able to, you know, when you're feeling just ecstatic and you know it's not appropriate to jump up and down in a particular moment, you need to be able to control that. When you're feeling very angry and you know it's not a good idea to lash out and yell or bang your fist on the table, it's good to control that. But also you want to be able to bring up or down your audience, right? I mean, we're talking about speakers and all that. You need to be able to get the audience riled up and excited and passionate about something to make change or calm them down and set them in the mood for something very serious that you need to talk about with them. So that's the other added bonus of emotional intelligence is when you get to the level of being able to manage the emotions of yours and others as well, then you've really peaked out there.
And how important is it to have emotional intelligence in leadership?
Oh, it's really important. In fact, there's a lot of research out there that shows it's more important than many other things like cognitive ability and technical ability, right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, you need to be able to work with people, and that's what it comes down to. We can manage projects and we can meet deadlines, but if we can't manage the people part of the work, then we're usually going to be what we call derailed, right? A lot of people are. And, you know, you see exceptions, right? You see all these exceptions of someone like Steve Jobs, who was really difficult to work with people, but he was this genius, so he made it. But that's the exception, not the rule.
Sure.
Right, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Nailed it. You know, when I was a drill instructor, you know, I think I was caught up, you know, in the military. I think I was caught up in, you know, in the I'm better than you, and I'm the guy, I'm the authority, I'm the, you know, and for the first, you know, 6 months to a year, I had zero, you know, emotional intelligence. I didn't know if I was getting through to them. I didn't know if I was losing it. I didn't know if I was, you know, I was awesome or what. I didn't know anything, you know, and so my people, my flights going through basic training, you know, they kind of suffered a little bit. You know, they weren't as good as, you know, they could be, you know. But I read a book by Sun Tzu. It's called The Art of War. And something he says in there will always stick with me. He said that, "Regard your soldiers as your children, and they will follow you into the deepest valley. Look on them as your only son, and they will follow you even unto death." And what I learned after reading that was that, you know, even though we have inspections, and even though we have certain benchmarks that we need to make, if as a leader, I'm so concerned with those benchmarks and hitting those targets that I'm sacrificing the people that are supposed to be following me, it's just not worth it. So focus more on the person, less on the numbers, and the numbers will come. It's kind of like we say, like, if you're an awesome entrepreneur and you're an awesome business owner, like, the money will come. Like, if you're a person of value, the money will come. The money is the result of the actions that you take. It's the same thing. As a leader, what are we focused on? Are we focused on people or are we focused on the result? So that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, well, I would add that if you're not a leader, if you don't have followers, so You need to be able to bring them on board with you, right? And work with them and understand
you make so
what
much
their
sense.
Needs are. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, God, I failed. Like, on so many levels. Like, I lost a couple. They were like, screw this guy, you know? But, you know, I thought that, you know, towards the end of my tour, and even now as a leader and what I do, like, I have that level of emotional intelligence that I can see the morale. I can see what they're fighting for, what they believe in. If what I say gets through to them, I'm also more emotionally aware of what I say to them instead of talking at them or talking down to them when I'm giving instructions or if I'm, you know, whatever I'm trying to tell them, I got to humanize it a little bit. And I think that coming from a place of empathy more than sympathy really speaks to that emotional intelligence as a leader.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Understanding what it's like from their side of the mountain, as you would say, really gives you an opportunity to bring them on to where you're trying to go. Yep. Empathy is huge right now, and it's something that I think we are lacking a little bit, unfortunately, in just our way of being in our society right now, that we need to be able to look at other people's perspectives more to help bridge the gaps that we're seeing. And that's just a way of emotionally to do that, but also just in terms of looking at people's cognitive perspectives as well, that'll help.
And what's cognitive?
Cognitive, sorry, they're thinking, what they're thinking, not just feeling. So, you know, people have different perspectives on why they do something. They might have a feeling that caused them to do something, or they might have a thought process that they went through to get there. And understanding where somebody's at and the thought process that they went through to make their decision, you can help find out why they did the things they did. And sometimes there's flaws in the decision-making process. I mean, I can tell you that I'm really attuned to that right now, having a 16-year-old who's out there with her driver's permit trying to learn how to drive.
Oh, boy.
I'm trying to make sure there are no holes in the process there. But, and I'm trying to work on my emotional intelligence when I'm sitting in the passenger seat and we're getting a little too close on the right. But,
there's a wall there.
But, you know, something else you said, Sean, about the emotional piece was also the resilience, and that's something I love about what you do and your show is that you're talking about making mistakes that you made when you were going through this the first time, right? And that's something that I think that we learn to be resilient and make the mistakes, and that helps us be a more emotionally stable, I suppose, able to control and manage ourselves, because we've realized that, okay, it's okay that we made a mistake, and I've learned from that, and now I know that I can get through it again the next time and maybe do things differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, what fires me up about resilience is the fact-based positive psychology research that has been done inside of mental, physical, social, and spiritual resilience. I absolutely, like, when I hear research studies like the Axe Effect and the London Cab Driver research and Broaden and Build Theory and the White Bear Phenomena and, like, you know, all of this stuff, you know, contributes to our resilience. You know, I just, like, it fires me up. You know, do you feel that same way? I mean, I would think that, you know, as a PhD and everything, like, you're like, oh, what kind of studies do we have? Like, how can I, you know, do things differently? How can I, you know, reach more people? And, right? I mean, I get fired up.
Oh, yeah. It's actually something I've been working with a lot with the younger people, the younger generation, is rebuilding resilience, because I think that's something that has gone by the wayside a little bit in recent years in terms of how we're raising kids, is protecting them and doing things for them and finding out that when they grow up and get out there in the workplace, they're not as, they're not as ready to take risks, make mistakes, fail, and pick themselves back up. And a lot of times we're seeing that people are less resilient when they do actually make mistakes and get negative feedback. So that's something I've been working on a lot lately.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, I saw a video by Simon Sinek talking about millennials and how, you know, participation trophies and the likes on Facebook. And it's like all of this stuff contributes, you know, to resilience and like coddling. And like, and one thing I do as a parent is, you know, even as a leader, you know, what I do is I don't give them everything. You know, I wait till they are struggling and then I'll give it to them. Right. I mean, I just, hey, make sure you do it this way. Like, there's, oh, well, I can just learn from him and, you know, whatever. Like, I want them to struggle. I want them to try to figure it out. I want them to go through hard stuff, you know, and kind of toughen them up a little bit. And I do that with my kids. You know what I mean? I'll tell them to do something, but I won't tell them the how. And I watch them struggle. I'm like, oh, figure it out. You almost got it. And then when they start to figure it out, I'm like, hey, if you do it this way, and they're like, oh, yeah. And then boom, and then they got it, you know. But if I just gave them everything, like, what am I teaching them?
You know, that's good. I mean, just in terms of education models and learning, people learn much more from doing than from just being told. I mean, in the workplace, you know, even at home, it works anywhere. The way I advise people is to think of yourself as a coach, right? I mean, sometimes it's just so much quicker and easier to do it for someone, right? As a manager, you need to get something out that day and it has to be presented in the right format and everything. And you're just like, oh, it would be so much quicker if I could just throw it together and get it out there. But then the person doesn't learn how to do it, right? So you have to step back and grin and bear it while they make some mistakes and just coach them and help them through that process and answer questions and talk them through the process so that they can do it again the next time. Because otherwise, you'll find yourself doing it for them every time.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
People. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Oh, preach. Good Lord. Like, I see it all the time. I'm like, why? Like, so here's what makes me mad. So, you know, you talk about coaches and everything, like, and I guess maybe all the coaches are trained a certain way. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. But, you know, you ask them a certain question, you ask them advice, like, what do you think? And I was like, well, how does it make you feel? Like, will you just tell me, like, what I need to know? Will you stop playing these damn games? You know what I mean? But it's all like a process. And so as a leader, you know, I don't do any of that, you know, but guys go up to me and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Or, hey, we need to get this done this way. And you want this done, you know, whatever. I'm like, well, what do you guys think? I mean, if it were you giving me an orders, you know, what would you do? Well, I mean, I would just tell you how to do it. Yeah. So when I ask that question, if the roles were reversed and you were telling me what to do, you know, how would you do it? Well, when they say, well, I would just tell you the answers, you know what? That's basically they're telling you what they want.
Yeah.
You know? And then I say, well, how do I learn if you just give me the answer? How do I figure things out on my own? How do I stand on my own 2 feet if I just give you everything or you give me everything? Like, how do we learn? How do we grow? How do we, they're like, okay, we get it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm just asking, exactly, like, how do you? And then they're like, oh, we got it, fine. So I'm like, well, you know, you figure it out, you know, and you figure out the best way. And then when you figure out a way, it goes into your mental bank, like, ooh, that worked. Keep that. This does not work. Throw this away. You know, but as a leader, you can only let them struggle for so long until they really get mad and be like, this guy sucks. So usually I let them struggle for a while and I'm like, hey, if you do this one thing, this might help you. Try it out. Like, oh my God, that worked. That did it. And then they keep going. They're stuck. And so I help them when they get stuck. But other than that, like when I'm, you know, leading my guys and, you know, or girls, and, you know, I'm telling them, like, hey, even with my kids, you know, I make sure that they're a part of the decision. Have you ever, do you find that to be a great tool, is like include them in part of the decision-making process?
Right. Yeah. You know, I agree. And what I often try to do is ask them questions to help them think about the different aspects of the situation. And often it's a question of, well, you know, what do you think might happen if you did it that way? You know, and then you have to look at it and who would it impact? You know, how much would it cost? You know, all the different things that they don't necessarily think about because you know, when they're, especially when they're kids or they're not the leader in the organization, they're not necessarily thinking about the money or some other, you know, other teams. They're going, oh, I don't know, I didn't realize it might actually affect the people on the other side of the company, you know, that if I do this. So, you know, asking those kind of things of like who would it affect and what other alternatives can you see, and those kind of questions to help them think. And sometimes they don't come up with a day like, well, I don't know, I never thought about that. You're like, well, in my experience,
you know, you might want to think about that.
Yeah. You know, when you make a policy change for your team, it's going to affect the rest of the teams too, you know, so maybe it's about telecommuting or something like that. And so looking at the various aspects that they aren't necessarily considering, you can add in there from your experience and knowledge.
Perfect. Perfect. So I'm curious, do you have any like influencers? I'm sure you got like a mentor or a coach or something, but are there any, you know, like Simon Sinek would be like an influencer for me, like, holy crap. Right. Mark Sanborn does a lot of leadership stuff. John Maxwell has written ungodly amount, like 70 something books, you know, and I'd say probably 50 of them are on leadership. Right. So definitely John Maxwell is a huge part of my leadership influence. But I'm curious about yours. Like, what are your influencers in life and in business and everything?
Oh, if you could see my office, you would find a bookshelf full of so many leadership books, just so many. And, you know, a few of the people that, I mean, one of my favorites is Bill George. He wrote the book True North. And
oh, I love that book.
Yes.
So
I aspire to be like him in so many ways. And he's really good at asking the questions. And the True North is about figuring out, you know, where you want to point yourself in the direction you want to be. And it's not just where you want to go, but it's what kind of a person do you want to be? How is that, manifesting in terms of your character and ethical person, you know? And so really getting you to think deeply about, you know, how you want to come across and how you make that a fundamental part of everything that you do and every decision you make. That's one of the reasons I love working, you know, and using his products and books and all that.
That's awesome. So what other influencers do you have?
Well, Steve Olscher, as I think you might know, somebody on the podcasting circuit there.
Definitely really Steve Olscher, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of getting out there and doing some of the leadership and getting the message out, he's somebody that I really look toward. Yeah. You know, in the other leadership areas in terms of emotional intelligence and all, Daniel Goleman has published a lot. He's somebody that I like to read a lot.
Okay. I like it. Awesome. So on the flip side of that, who has been some of your biggest supporters?
Oh, goodness gracious. I don't know if I have the big names on that end, but let's see.
Oh, you don't need big names?
Yeah. I have people that, you know, you can't do it all alone. I mean, obviously I've got my family and friends who've been my supporters, and I couldn't live without them and get what I do done without them. In terms of colleagues, I have some great colleagues who are also book authors and leaders in various areas. And Larry Ackerman is one. He does a lot of work on identity and the self, and I have other collections of people that I meet with regularly to get support on the writing pieces and things like that. I have one colleague who has always been a mentor to me in terms of being a professor and consultant, and that's Bernardo Ferdman. He's another colleague, a professor here in San Diego, does work in diversity and inclusion. And he's taught me a lot about, well, both about the diversity and inclusion, but also how to be supportive of others and really sticking your neck out for them to do things for them and offer without being asked. And so I've appreciated him for doing stuff for me that has really changed my life, and learning how to do that for others because it's role modeling.
Perfect. I like it. So tell everybody we were at the bio, you know, what is it that you do? You know, you work with the companies to attract, develop, retain top talent. How do you approach leadership? I guess is what I'm trying to ask. Like, how would you approach leadership? Like, you go into a company, somebody hires you, you know, what is it that you're doing for them?
Okay. That's a good question. Really, it's in the realm of talent management. And so from a company's perspective, what I do is I can go in and help put together a performance management system for them, which means defining what kind of characteristics and skills and abilities are needed to do certain jobs. And usually we start at the top. That's where the most funding is for doing this kind of thing. But putting together what we call a competency model for a leader, or a job description for what somebody needs to do, and then putting together the other things that you would need to make that be a successful position in the companies. That means the hiring of the person, or selection is another term that we use, so how you would hire them, what kind of job description, what you would do to determine if that person would be a good fit, and then assessing their performance as they go along, and then helping them develop in areas that they don't have the strengths, or they might be new and they need to learn these things to do better in their job or to be promoted to the next level. So that might be some kind of coursework, workshops. I do workshops and help that people. I also do coaching, executive coaching usually, and for management. If people have funding and the time to work individually, one-on-one with me, and also help people get feedback in organizations from their peers so that it's people around them that can help them grow as well.
Perfect.
It's working from the company, helping everyone, you know, get on board, build their teams, and develop into the best workers they can be. For individuals, it's really about the coaching and training. That's how I help people.
Perfect. Important is the feedback process and all that?
Yeah, that's the critical piece. If you don't ever have feedback and you don't know how you're doing, you're not going to know where you need to make a change or where you're succeeding, right? And that's something that the millennials have really caught on to. They want the feedback. Some other folks aren't as willing to deliver the feedback, especially if there's a problem, because it's hard. It's hard to tell somebody, well, maybe it wasn't as good as I expected, and see the disappointment. But there are ways of doing it in a compassionate way, in a constructive way that's not negative. But people need to get some information on how they're doing to calibrate and figure out, keep doing this or do something different.
Perfect. Yeah, what I started doing recently was – like asking them for feedback about, because usually, like, as a leader, like, I'm giving them the feedback. You know, I do like the good, bad, good sandwich, you know, like, you're really great and really this, but blah, 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 blah. But this is really good. And this is, you know, so the bad is sandwiched in between like two good things, you know, and leave them on a high note and all that. But I asked them, I was like, so what about me? Like, give me feedback as a leader, you know? And at first, it kind of hurt, you know, it kind of bruised the ego a little bit, you know, because I thought I was like the new hotness. And I was like, yeah, like I'm the best, I'm the greatest, you know, and not so much. I wasn't doing as good as like I could have, you know, and so it kind of hurt a little bit. But I feel like if I give them the opportunity during a feedback session with them, and I end it with, so what do you think about me? You know, where could I improve, or you know, what's your feedback about me? Using you know, a formula that we talked about, you know, whatever. How can I improve? You know, what are some feedback did you give me? And sometimes they're all over the place. Sometimes it's probably a consistent thing. Like, I don't like this, or this, or this, or this. I was like, oh, okay. Well, if everybody says the same thing, then crap, you know.
Carrie, you really got to make that change.
Right. You're like, and it's hard sometimes to not hear that you're doing as well as you think. You know, yep. So that was rough.
Oh, it is hard. And again, being tough and taking it and being able to thank somebody for the feedback, because surely it's hard for them to deliver it when it's challenging like that. But also not be defensive, right? Just listening and thanking them. And you don't have to promise to do anything, but just thanking them for giving it to you. And you know, you could just at the minimum promise that you will give it some thought and take it in. But not suddenly jumping and going, but it was this or but it was that or that, yeah. You know, it's a situation. That's the hard part. I find a lot of people just really want to give a reason for it. And even myself, right, included. So having to just temper that and say, oh, okay, I'm just going to say thank you and then think it through later, you know, in terms of what I did, what my piece was, what I could do differently. And make that change.
Yep. Perfect. So what are some resources that people can go? Do you have any resources on your website about, you know, how to be a leader or some of the cognitive things that you've talked about? What are some resources that people can use or find?
I do have resources. I actually have a tab right there on my website called resources. So I would suggest
Weird
that
question,
you go there.
Huh?
Yeah,
Weird
it's
question.
A great question. Go there. And there are a lot of free resources that I have there listed, you know, in terms of taking you to other people's products and services too, but things that I think are really good, books that I recommend. I also have my own book out there, and that's Flying Without a Helicopter. It's more about empowering younger people we're talking about, which is, you know, kids all the way through 20-somethings in the workplace and really helping them be more resilient. I mean, these things apply to all of us at all ages, but I think the younger people need more work on that just because they're younger and because maybe we have protected them a lot more than we were protected growing up. So that's another thing. It's a great resource, I think, at least in my own humble opinion here.
Yeah. What's the why about the book? Like, why would you write that?
Why did I write the book? That's a great question, because, you know, there wasn't like that whole moment or anything, but it was more about it needed to be written. It wasn't because I wanted to write it and I wanted to get out there. It didn't come from me as much as it was pulled from me, because what happened was I was out there in the workplace doing what I do with leadership development, working with lots of leaders, and so many of the challenges they were having was working with the younger generation. And this has been over the last 10 years or so, you know, working with millennials, we've all heard all the stereotypes and everything, and I'm getting that day in, day out, all these challenges. And so I also, at the time, my daughter was a lot younger, now she's driving, but back then she was just starting school, and I was seeing that the parenting was so different and that the education system was so different. And as I just was saying before, it was about parents jumping in, handling things for their kids, teachers telling the parents to check over their homework and, you know, make sure it's all done for them. And I kept saying, whoa, I can see why these kids are growing up not being able to do it on their own and not developing these skills to navigate through conversations and difficult situations because the parents are doing it for them. And that's when I made that connection and said, okay, this needs to be written so that people will understand down the line what the consequences are of this. It's not just the immediate consequences. It's like when they're 23 years old and they still don't know how to talk to somebody or to deliver that feedback as we were talking about or be able to take that feedback, because it's not somebody telling them that they're wonderful all the time. So that's what the why was, is seeing that connection and seeing that the younger people were struggling and older people were struggling to work with them and wanting to help. So that's the why to fly without a helicopter.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that a lot of people have business books leadership books, mindset books. I mean, you name it, they got it for adults. What are they doing for the kid? Like, I don't see a lot of, I'm not talking like a children's book, you know, but I mean, so I made my kid read, he's 15, and he read How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he couldn't give a crap.
I mean, maybe at that age, yeah.
Right, he was like, eh, whatever. I mean, it was all right. I mean, yeah. I was like, well, what about the stories? You know, the guy, like, talking to this other guy, you know. I'm like, I mean, I get it, you know. I know what I got to do. Well, right, but, like, what stood out? Like, I read the book, and I'm like, there's so much here. There's so much gold, you know. And he's just like, meh.
Did you read the teen version of that book? Because there is
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, see, that might appeal more. Just giving them, we're talking about their perspective. Like, what does a 15-year-old care about? It's not necessarily what you care about when you're, you know, out there working and all that. So trying to appeal to their needs and putting in their words. Yeah, so that might be an option. Thinking of something that's
perfect
written for people of that age, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to have to find that, you know, because there's a, I don't know if you know what the Miracle Morning books are, but there's a book by Hal Elrod, and then a bunch of other, you know, authors will get into it and, you know, write it out with them. And one of them is called The Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. And it's a great meditation, mindfulness, emotional intelligence. Like, it's all wrapped into this book called The Miracle Morning for Parents and Families. And the Miracle Morning books are about having a morning routine, winning the morning so you can win the day, but more so just having those daily routines and mindfulness and you know, emotional intelligence. You know, so that really, I mean, he liked that one, and we do some of the exercises out of it. He really liked that one, but I literally can't name but like two books that are directly for like teenagers other than the chicken soup books. I mean, forget the chicken soup for a second.
Right.
You know, which are great, you know, but outside of that, what do you have for kids? So I think what you did here is absolutely amazing and a heck of a need, you know, to really prepare the teenagers, you know, who are going to be 18 and 19 soon.
Yeah. That's
my opinion.
Yeah. And another way to reach them might be through YouTube. I mean, just a different medium altogether today.
That's awesome. Perfect. So as we wrap up, I'm really curious where you're headed now. Like, what kind of new adventures, businesses, family, like, what's the rest of your 2018 look like?
Well, you know, the millennials are growing up a bit, and I've been focusing on them for a while. I was telling you, with the newer generation of things out there, and the oldest are in the late 30s. They're going to be 40 soon. They're buying houses, having kids, and starting to do more adulting, as they say. And so one of the things I've been doing is really looking in a broader way of how are all the generations working together and what kind of conflicts are coming up in terms of just generational conflicts. And we have to think of it in terms of they are the ones leading us pretty soon. They're getting out there in number, and we're having to adapt to their ways, not forcing them to adapt to our ways. And one of the things that is important to think about is just how can we all collaborate with these very different perspectives in life and how we were raised and what kind of tools we were raised with. You know, the younger people are raised, as I was just saying, like on YouTube, and the older people are raised with, you know, books or things like that. And how are we going to all work together to get things done instead of being at each other's throats because we are saying, no, it has to be done my way, not your way.
Right.
And that's something I've seen a lot in the workplace, is this conflict between the different generations. And so, you know, I have some talks that I've put together to get out there in organizations and get up there and do some speaking on it, webinars and all that. And I work with teams on doing some team building on this cross-generational conflict and collaboration. So that's something
Perfect.
That's been a lot of fun for 2018. It's one of my big projects.
I love it. I love it. So this is the moment of the show where we do a shameless plug. You can plug a friend, quotes, websites, Facebook, whatever it is that you want to say or do. This is your moment to shine. Shameless plug. Go.
Well, my plug is really to go to my website, flexibleworksolutions.com. I have a blog that I update regularly and lots of resources, as we're talking about. My book is there, and also the topics that I speak on are up there. And so I love to send people there, just one-stop shopping, to see where they can get the book, where they could get a speaker if they have an organization that needs somebody to come in, or whether they would like some coaching or consulting. So go to my website, check it out, sign up for the blog, and get your regular updates on that, just with interesting stuff that's going on my blog.
Boom. Nailed it. Perfect. So, final question is, what do you enjoy most about what you do?
Well, what do I enjoy most is helping other people help themselves. And when I just get that flash of understanding or self-insight or that feeling that I can see going through their eyes of, I guess I can do it. I've got an idea of what I can do now to change or that's different. That just means everything to me. I mean, yeah, I need to make some money, but it's really about seeing other people make progress in their lives. I mean, it sounds corny, but it's so true. It's just, that's like, yay. And, you know, when I talk about impact, and I like to get out there and do talks and all that to reach a wider audience. But really, when I measure my success, it's about one person at a time. If I have made a positive impact on one person in even a small way, you know, then I feel like I've been successful. And that's what keeps me going from day to day.
I love it. Yes. Perfect. As you wrap up, deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action.
Yeah, well, change is hard. And
it can
be uncomfortable, and we don't always want to do it because, you know, psychologically speaking, we like to feel comfortable in a place where everything's easy. And making change, you're talking about someone to take action, means moving through that discomfort and continuing on. And even if it does feel bad for a little while, it's just like if you want to go do something physical, like work out. If you change your routine or try a new workout, your muscles are going to be sore during that first week, but they'll adapt. And the brain adapts too when you make a change in your way of doing things. So know that it may be uncomfortable, and use that to fuel you to move forward instead of holding you back.
Boom. That was amazing. Is there anything else that I missed that you would like to talk about in the show?
Yeah, I just still say about the next generation is helping to empower them will help all of us. So anything you can do for the younger folks is going to help our whole society and our whole world. So just keep them in mind and see what you can do to help them be the best that they can be.
Definitely. Yep. Definitely. Fully agree with that. Absolutely. I would love to just thank you for your time, your value, your mind. You're just amazing, and you're doing amazing things in the world. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Sean. This has been a privilege for me to be here. So thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thank you so much. And you're going to do amazing things in this world. So Life Transformation Radio listeners, another amazing show, another impactful guest. Please connect with Dr. Joni Connell. She is crushing it, doing amazing things in the leadership and resilience and emotional intelligence world. And so connect with her at www.flexibleworksolutions.com. flyingwithoutsolutions.com. Her book website is www.flyingwithout.com. And then you got Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Like, she is everywhere. Connect with her on these platforms. I'm telling you, she's the person to know. So as we close the show, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call that living your brand. So until next episode, have a great night.